Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously, and the podcast about rugby that is here with you 52 weeks of the year.
Yeah. Now, I just want to mention something. I'm very impressed with us because it's pulling back the curtain a bit, but you just did that introduction without being able to hear the music. And what that makes me feel like is, do you ever watch those Special Forces films and they communicate in complete silence? Pointing at the eyes, tapping the head, signalling.
It's like like Ian McGeoghegan's speech in the 97 Living with Lions video where he says, one of his speeches, he says, you know, what you're going through together, I'm paraphrasing because he says it a lot more eloquently and powerfully than I ever could, but he says, if in effect, you know, what we're going through together, one day you'll see one of these men that you're in this room with right now walking down the street.
Yeah.
You won't say a word. It will just be a look and you'll know.
The fact that I managed to press that button and you managed to do that intro, it's like if I just gave you the small sign and you adjusted your telescopic gun sight by two clicks and then squeezed the trigger gently three times. We just know.
I've no idea whether you're listening to this on the way to work or a little break from during the festive period. Have you got any more work to do, Phil?
I've got a bit to do tomorrow. I'm officially off tomorrow, but I've got a few things that need to get done.
I'm guessing I'm going to have a bit of free time. So, yeah, I'm off for Christmas.
Tomorrow's my last day.
Is it?
Work, yeah, so I'm working on Monday and then...
What happens to Virgin Radio when you're off?
Well, I mean, obviously, it's all grinds to a halt. Yeah.
Do they get, like, a locum in, like Chris Moyles or someone?
Someone substandard.
Substandard.
No, everybody is outstanding that works on the station, obviously. No, actually, because I'm... Basically, the big names get... This is the way radio works. The big names get the first choice. They can just have... So when I used to do the breakfast show on XFM Manchester...
You'd be like, working Christmas, not anymore.
I'd just pick. Like, I want 2 weeks off over Christmas and New Year. Fair enough. It's just the way it goes. I'm further down the pecking order. So it's my choice was Christmas or New Year.
Oh, you don't get both of it?
Which one do you want to work?
Do you know what? To be fair, you don't want both. It's too long.
Yeah. With JB and my wives are both doctors. And they normally, when they're doing shifts... They normally have the same decision, and Claire tends to alternate. So I've 1 year doing Christmas Eve, Christmas, Boxing Day, and then the following year doing New Year's Eve, New Year's Day.
Do you know who has no time off over the Christmas period?
Us.
Rugby players.
And rugby podcasters.
And rugby podcasters.
Well, this rugby podcast.
Some rugby podcasters.
Exactly. What a fascinating week. I mean, it was a week which I looked at the fixtures for the Premiership. And I found almost every game hard to call. And then in the end, there was some utter beatdowns. Utter beatdowns. It was a weekend of beatdowns.
Yeah. Well, there was a few beatdowns. Some beatdowns that until 50, 60 minutes did not look like they were going to be beatdowns. Specifically, the Gloucester-Worcester game.
Yeah.
3-3 at half-time. It was only after the yellow card late on, with 20 minutes to go, that Gloucester ran away with it. And the Exeter-Leicester game.
Yeah. I'd have thought about this, right? Going into these games, it was hard to pick. And I think everyone had a healthy amount of respect for everyone else. So I'll give you an example. Worcester, who I thought could win this game. I wouldn't be surprised if Gloucester thought the same thing. And it wasn't until like halfway through the game I thought, actually, we're going to batter these guys. I wonder if it's because it's so even going in, all the teams felt fairly even. Because everything seems to happen, with the exception of Bath, fairly late on in the games.
Yeah, it did. Gloucester would be confident at home, I'd say.
Yes.
it was more, I think they were probably surprised at how resilient that Worcester defence was.
Yeah, they were, weren't they?
They were bloody, it was impressive, impressive stuff, particularly in that first half.
But that goes two ways, right? Because if you think about playing Worcester or being in a game like that, one of two things happens. So you come off the field, if you're Gloucester, and go, we threw everything at that and we still haven't scored, that's a nightmare. Or you come off the field and say, we are well on top, let's go out there and absolutely batter them.
It's like Dolph Lundgren by about round 11 in Rocky IV, when he turned to his trainer and went, he's not a man, he's like a piece of iron.
Exactly, exactly.
but instead of going, I'm battering him, if I just keep going...
Yeah.
It
happened to Sale against Gloucester, of all teams, because Sale were completely on top of Gloucester all first half at the start of the season. And I was speaking to one of the Gloucester players afterwards, and they're like, when we came off at half-time, we knew that we'd weathered the storm and that we could go out there and win. And I was kind of surprised that Worcester didn't feel that way.
Yeah, at Worcester, they never got the territory in possession. They were just always absorbing...
Yeah, and when they had the ball, what did they do with it?
Well, so one thing, I mean, I'm not trying to say I was right, but I kind of am going to say I was right.
Please,
one thing I have been saying for several weeks on this podcast now is, it's, you can't judge the first 5 weeks of the Premiership accurately. So you can't say we need to temper saying Northampton are incredible. We need to temper saying that Leicester are absolutely awful and Bath are dreadful. Can't judge it yet. There's a load of international players that have been away at the World Cup. There's some big holes being filled. We'll start to get a sense now. And again, I mean, you don't want to jump from one conclusion to another, but I think you can look with a lot more optimism if you're Bath and even Leicester than prior to this weekend.
Yeah, and conversely, if you are London Irish,
yes,
you will be pessimistic, where otherwise you would have been, up to this point, pretty optimistic. Because that was a real beatdown. That was probably the biggest, in terms of the way the game went, even bigger than Saracens Bristol.
Yeah.
And do you remember London Irish 2 years ago? Started relatively well, got points on the board, and then their performances fell off a cliff.
Yeah, and they just could not win a game.
And you hope for them this doesn't have that sort of effect, but that could be a demoralising, psychologically demoralising defeat.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
And they've got some big names this time around, though, that should make them more resilient than that.
I count them up, and I'm pretty sure they had something like, I'm going to say, 12 Southern Hemisphere players starting for them today.
Yeah. In their starting... So
certainly, only one of the pack is English. And Means, obviously, not English. You've got Myler. Then you got
Coleman, Maffey.
The inside centre was born in London.
Van der Merwe. Cowan is New Zealand born.
I get six Northern Hemisphere players in the starting lineup, excluding Cowan.
Yeah, and actually, you should exclude... If you exclude that 12 as well, because he was born in London.
That's excluding him. So Jackson, Stevenson, Hassel Collins, Myler, Hobbs, Awoyemi, Hoskins, I'm assuming is...
Australian.
Is he Australian? Yeah. Okay, then five. Five.
Yeah. I think what they have...
Northern Hemisphere.
I spent some time with them this week at the training ground, and I think that they are making that and talking about that as part of their identity. They're a team of exiles. It's not just the exiles. It's like, we're a team from all over the world. We've come together.
Why not rebrand as London Southern Hemisphere? just the season.
But they're trying to take that on as their identity, acknowledge that they are from distant corners. But yeah, this is a total reversal of the game at Ashton Gate a few weeks ago when they managed to squeeze out a 27-all draw with 14 men for the entire second half.
Yeah, that was...
Real, like, mental resilience.
And the fight and the heart that they showed in that game compared to the total lack of...
Did you both watch it?
Yeah.
I mean, I thought it was the most amazing game to watch.
It was ridiculous as a neutral.
Yeah, I mean, I've never seen a game where... I mean, once it... It's hard to say. There are elements of the game where I thought they did all right. I thought the pack was reasonable. I think they struggled in the scrimmage eventually. But I thought it was just brutal watching the Irish back three. I mean, it was hard to watch at times.
Well, they're missing Naholo, and Who would be their fullback when everyone's fit?
Loader.
Jackson.
Loader in the Naholo.
Jackson has been playing.
Yeah, Jackson's
fullback.
Starting there.
Well, he went off early and Loader and Naholo weren't there.
Just riddle me this, right? I get you.
Curtis Rona's not a winger.
I know you want to put your most expensive players on the field, right? Like, for instance, Rona on the wing. Why pay Paddy Jackson the reported money that he's on and throw him at fullback? It just seems like I'd rather put Myler there.
I mean, Myler didn't have a good game in this game,
no,
did
but, he? Yeah, but Jackson's like, you want your best player playing 10, right?
Yeah.
And presumably he is the best player.
He's probably the best player other than...
They've squeezed out their wins by being quite pragmatic.
Mm.
Which suits Myler.
Box kicking sticks.
And don't get me wrong, I don't think Myler's a bad player at all. And if like you say, Tim, if you're pragmatic, Myler is not a bad... I mean, he's seen everything. He's been there before. He's very calm. He can kick his goals. He can kick around the field.
Priestland today looked like a guy that, he's not going to do much incredibly flash himself, although he has had some moments this season, but he's got great players outside him. Just let him give him the ball.
But then Priestland, in a game like this, so Priestland and that whole Bath backline looked brilliant because they were afforded so much time on the ball by what was seemed like the slowest London Irish defence I've ever seen. They were just waiting for Homer, Watson, Jonathan Joseph, Rocco Degouni to do something instead of coming on and putting pressure on them.
Rocco Degouni, to me, looked like a guy playing at 50%. I don't know if you got that. But like, he didn't
there was
look
one
like,
run down the right wing in the first half.
He didn't ever look like he put his foot down completely. Like you expect him to be lightning fast. He was kind of, just looking for other options. He looked relaxed. That's the best way to... His style play was relaxed.
He had so much time on the ball. Loads of time.
Oh my God, what do I do? I've got... There's no one around me.
No one coming up. No one putting any pressure on me.
Yeah, it was worrying for London Irish. Again, because they have shown such heart in previous games, I think they will be able to... Just write it off as a bad day at the office.
I mean,
yes,
I don't think you're going to have... I mean, we have to really spend some time deconstructing that Stephen Myler crossfield kick. That was... I assumed it was penalty advantage. I mean, I thought... there's no way a man of that experience makes that mistake many times.
What was the one where someone got just kicked the ball in their head? Is that what you're...
That was...
That was the pass, wasn't it, from
that was Meehan kicking it into...
No, Phipps.
Fitz kicking it into Meehan.
No, throwing it into Stokes. So Stokes was the lad that came off the bench, who I've never heard of.
Came on at 15.
And I felt so sorry for him, because, he's not... I mean, maybe it's a gap in my knowledge, but I'm going to assume, because I've never heard of him, he's not played much Premiership rugby, I'd assume.
Yeah.
I could be completely wrong. So he's put out there, and he just doesn't seem to be comfortable under the high ball whatsoever. They then have to put Meehan on the other wing, or something else happens. I think Stokes goes to fullback. They've then got the other sub who comes on and then goes off again. I mean, London Irish weren't good, but I don't think the injuries helped them in any way whatsoever.
No.
The injuries were brutal.
And London Irish West scored as many tries in this one game as they have in the first five rounds of the Gallagher Premiership. So London Irish West were looking all right by comparison. And, maybe will you... retract a bit of the Hooper.
In fact, if anything, I mean...
The Hooper stick.
Okay, so it's a difficult one because Hooper is... he's always going to get it because he's head of the organisation. But actually, I still believe that Bath needs to get rid of Tarquin and Hooper. I mean, the problem that Hooper has is he's going to be linked, no matter what he does, to the previous 5 years. So ever since Bath went to that Premiership final, they have been in a constant state of flux, a constant state of rebuilding. They've gone through various senior guys, and through it all, Hooper has been either involved or in the background. He's basically the next guy up from whoever's in charge. I think if Bath needs to be successful, maybe they stick with Hooper and everything turns out rosy. I just can't see that being the case. I just can't. So, no, Hooper still... Not Hooper himself, but the whole thing needs to be overhauled. Mm. But then there again, it's Bruce Craig's club and he can run it how he wants.
Yeah, he can do whatever he wants.
Yeah, he's never going
to... On Hooper, just to make basically the point that you made about London Irish in reverse, Bath have played really badly most of this season. They've had one good game against a team that totally underperformed.
Yeah.
Let's judge them in another... Yeah,
well,
which is the point that you've been making.
The next 2 weeks of the Premiership.
Yeah.
Well, same with Leicester. The man who led Bath to that Premiership final is now one of the coaches at Leicester. And despite defeat, I think Leicester fans can feel all right. And feel more confident about them.
Cautiously agree.
Now, I'm totally mixed on this one because that first half was good. The first half, they got their strike runners into the game.
They looked hard, didn't they?
They looked hard. They're pack fronted up, but more importantly, or as importantly, they got Tuilagi into the game. They got Vianu, who's fit after so long of being in and out of
Ford
fitness.
Ford looked awesome
in that first half. Ford getting the right platform from the forwards and then picking the right option, be it Johnny May or Thompson or Tuilagi.
Johnny May's finish as well.
Yeah.
He had no right to score that. Was it his second try?
His second try. And some of the, like, Taufua looking dangerous, such a powerful runner, and Lavanini looking like that, and Genge looking like that. But then, for all of that good work in the first half that they did, and they were deserved leaders, they scored the three tries in the first half, they then had almost no ball, almost no territory, not even a foothold on the game, and just were slowly strangled by Exeter to the point where they were trying to play out of their own 22 when they had no, they'd not earned the right to be able to play
out
of their 22.
They reverted to type.
They totally, totally panicked, and it was a lack of fitness, a lack of structure, a lack of the pack being able to continue that dominance, and that meant that the whole team capitulated.
Yeah,
that's what I'd be really worried about, because extra a good team, but
the guy who I really rate, and we didn't see him much last year. I mean, I'd have to look back at the team sheets to make that exact statement. But Will Spencer, I mean, I think he adds some real steel.
Well, they've got Callum Green in there now as well. He does the same.
Yeah, so they had Callum Green at six, didn't they?
Yeah.
Labanini, Will Spencer. Like, okay, here we go. They're ready for a fight, and it does make a difference. When he went off, they got a bit softer, and we've just not seen him all last season, which is exactly what they need. They can get him, Labanini, Callum Green. If you get a mixture of those coming in and out, I think they're going to win. They're going to do marginally better than what they've been doing.
Yeah, well, they might be able to. Well, again, we can't flip everything on its head. But Wasps have some issues, and London Irish, could we see the sort of the air coming out of their balloon? I don't know.
But, potentially.
Let's jump into some of those games. But there's been some a bit of news this week, and some really awful news as well.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Really horrible. And I think it's worth mentioning. Yeah. News at the age of 36 that Ibrahim Diarra died from a heart attack.
Yeah.
Now I don't know anything about the story other than obviously what you told me there. How was he playing, or what was the situation?
No, I think he had a heart attack and then was in hospital for a period of time. And didn't make it. A hell of a player.
Mm. Was French international back in the late 2000s.
Yeah, back row, powerful, explosive back row.
Retired at the end of last season in the sort of the lower leagues in France, but he was one of those guys that got one cap, I think.
Yeah,
but he made it to the French team, and yeah, at the age of 36, absolutely awful. And then. Crossing codes, but worth mentioning that rugby league's Rob Burrows with motor neurone disease. You know, only a week after Doddy Weir inspired the sort of whole British sporting world with his words
I don't really know where to begin with that. I mean, that's why I didn't tweet about it, because I just can't think of anything really constructive to say about it. It's just such a horrific condition.
Yeah, it's so awful. Burrows, I used to watch a lot of rugby league, hardly any anymore, but Burrows was one of those absolutely electric players who just, he would light up any game that he played in, because he's such a dangerous strike runner.
He was electric.
He was absolutely electric, but he's a great example. He's one of the smallest players I've ever seen play. He's about 5'4".
Yeah, he's tiny, isn't he?
He's absolutely tiny, but he's such a talented player. It's horrible.
Kind of, he had some Colby-esque quality to him, didn't he?
Yeah, his pick and goes from halfback position. He's just brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, he played
in a great Leeds team as well.
Yeah, I'm by no means the best person to talk about this, but I think maybe just go and read up on the disease itself. I was lucky enough to speak to Doddy Weir in one of the events, and when he describes what it does and how it affects you,
it was at the World Rugby Awards in Monaco last year.
That's right, yeah. And
he was on the podcast.
Yeah,
yeah.
And but like when you understand actually what it means to the individual that has it, it's just the simply cruelest. The most awful disease.
Yeah. Yeah, and everyone will remember seeing Youth van der Vesteijzen.
Was that it as well?
Yeah. Yeah. Some of the most talented and hardest men. Mm. Yeah. Horrible.
So, at the, particularly at this time of year, I think that's definitely worth reflecting on that.
Yeah.
Elsewhere, Liam Williams, well, has he actually signed?
There's reports.
Let's say he has.
I mean, it's happening, certainly
isn't
it? Reported on BBC as well as Wales Online.
Oh.
So, a reported 400k to take him back to Scarlets.
I don't get this. I simply don't understand it. So, the Welsh regions are not like teams as we know them. They are there for other reasons. It's not to be competitive in the league, and it's certainly not to be competitive in Europe by the looks of things. When they buy a player in, for instance, like the Ospreys have, you simply never see them. I mean, Tipperick, I think it's something like 6 months since Tipperick last threw on an Osprey shirt.
Same with Warburton back in the day. Obviously, injuries are part of that.
Same with Alan Wynne-Jones.
So this 400k, which I've got, I mean, if Liam Williams can pick up 400k from a Premiership team, the WRU should say, please pay him 400k. I mean, that would be great, because then we can get, you know, four or five other players who will be the next Liam Williams to bring him into the Scarlets. For what reason? So they can finish third in a conference.
Well, I can only assume that a big part of this is being under WRU control. So they, unlike at Saracens, where they are going to make him. Give his money's worth when he's playing for them. He will be playing in every game that they can get him into. The WRU can control him in the same way you've described for Tips and Lydia and Warburton.
Yes, I agree with you, Phil. I think that is what it is. But in the when you think to have not done that for the last 2 years, but to be doing it now immediately after a World Cup,
seems like the wrong way around.
That's a very good point. If you're going to get your Welsh players back in, get them in 21.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So you've got 18 months, 2 years of them.
In fact, save up all of that money now.
Save all that.
The whole Welsh squad together.
Yeah.
That's a great point.
The other point is, Scarlets have got Lee Halfpenny. So why have a team with two of the Welsh fullbacks? Why not spread them around a bit? I don't get it. And lastly, I don't know if this is still the policy, because I don't pay enough attention to Welsh rugby, and frankly, nor should I. But this idea of a market rate offer. Now, I have no doubt that 400k is the market rate. That's a good rate. But what does it say to every other fullback who has a Welsh cap? I mean, as soon as you have a Welsh cap now, are you worth 400k? I mean, how do you value yourself next to Liam Williams? Do you have to have the same amount of caps as him? Do you have to show? I mean, do you have to be better under the high ball? Have they set a market rate? And if I'm then going up for renegotiation this year, and I maybe have got 30 caps and I'm really, really good, can I just say, give me 400k? And they'll go, no, we're going to give you 200k.
Who would be comparable in the world? Who legitimately could in the Welsh squad be knocking on the door now and going, you need to double my money? Like Justin Tipperick, for example? A British and Irish Lion?
Justin Tipperick
kind of player? Because that's the JD. JD.
JD, yeah, JD.
JD I mean, definitely could legitimately knock on the door and go,
Josh Adams?
400k, please.
Josh Adams is a great player.
He's not a Lion. But remember, true, Liam Williams has played Lion starter, won a European Cup.
JD might be on that money.
He might already be on that money.
He was in France and came back.
It should be the other way around, though, right? It should be, if you're a Lion, you're allowed to leave. You know, you then satisfy the criteria. You know, we know that you're a good player. Off you go.
I actually think that's a really good point.
Yeah.
Like, if you made it to a British and Irish Lion, maybe, particularly now Warren Gatland isn't also coaching Wales. I think no one would raise their eyebrows at that rule.
Yeah, this Lion seems going to be purely English players.
Now, did either of you read the Charlie Morgan piece in The Telegraph this week?
No, but I do love all things that Charlie Morgan writes, so I'm happy to hear.
So, on the squeezed middle of English rugby, Premiership rugby.
Yes, okay, please, tell me about that.
So, saying that there's been a marked increase in the percentage of players who are earning below 70k in the Premiership, and fewer players in that middle bracket of 70k to, I can't remember the exact figure, but let's just say, call it 200k, that middle. There are still a similar number of players earning a higher number, the George Fords, the Piatow, the premium players.
It's the same with most entertainment industries, music, acting. There's a pyramid, and the majority of the money congregates at the very top.
Yeah.
Very, yeah.
It's not. So exactly as Tim said, and just to put a bit more meat on these bones here, I've actually written about something similar to this.
It's the same in radio, by the way. I can say.
Yeah,
I'll let you know when I'm at the top of the pyramid.
You're outside the pyramid now, Tim.
Oh. Above the pyramid.
Above the pyramid.
Halo hovering above the pyramid.
Don't say it sound too loudly, but he's on TV money now. TV money. So it's got to the extent now that when the salary cap rises, they're pretty much using the increase in salary cap not to spread this wealth among all the players. Far from it. They're using it to re-up their most expensive players.
Yeah,
and that's exactly what it, I mean. I think the team that gets to grips with the salary cap, this is not a shock. By the way, or the teams that do it, or the teams that are going to do much much better. So there's going to be an enormous amount of value now in that 70 to 150k player, and it's about sifting through them and making sure you can get them on the right value in the right sort of conditions. Because there's going to be loads and loads of them. In fact, the majority of the squads are now going to be lower paid players.
There is a money ball element here, isn't there?
Yeah, massively.
Because it's a really interesting one in that for a lot of the season you're without, say, like a guy like Liam Williams.
Yeah.
Like come a European Cup final, if you get there, or semi final, or a Premiership semi final, it's like that's where these guys earn their corn, isn't it?
Yeah.
So in that just, one moment.
Yeah.
And also,
match winners potentially.
That's another point about Liam Williams, right? Which is when I saw those figures, the first thing I thought is not always a British and Irish Lion. I never thought that. I thought, he's a fullback. Now, don't get me wrong, fullbacks are important, but they're not 400k's worth of important. Yeah. That's tight head prop money.
So, yeah. That's what I was going to say. Where would you prioritise, if just purely on position? Because it used to always be, like Richard Cockerell's old phrase, back in the day at Leicester, my most valuable player is my tight head prop. My second most valuable player is my backup tight head prop.
It's got to be fly half, hasn't it?
I think it is 10 now.
Got to be fly half.
Yeah.
So I do like 15 as important, and possibly the most expensive player in the league is Charles Pietau.
Yeah.
And
Stuart Hogg.
Hogg will be on at least 400k. I would guess.
A rumored half a mil.
That's what the rumor was when he signed. 15, I think, is a really important position.
So there's also positions.
Number eight is really important as well.
Yeah, number eight is what's going to come to. There are also some positions which are super important, but super common. Back row. Don't spend any money on back row whatsoever. There are hundreds and hundreds of back row out there which you can pick up for next to nothing, and they're going to be really good.
I would say, with the exception of number eights. So six and seven needs to come by.
Definitely.
But someone like a Billy Vunipola or a Pickermalls or a Dwayne Vermaelen, there are literally five
of them.
Yeah, there are that few guys of that talent who can do everything in heavy traffic.
You would struggle to name all the great flankers that just reside in Sale Sharks.
Flankers.
Let alone across the league.
Flankers who are phenomenal at work rate and effort and tackling and hitting ruck after ruck after ruck. Yeah. There are lots of those.
Yeah.
And the number eights.
So I met Mark Wilson this week, and I'll talk about that later.
Again, would you like to advance on your muscle tone of a chimp?
Observation. I actually spoke to him about that. And do you know who referenced as one of his influences growing up, Tim? Or say growing up, being in the world of rugby, to be in the shape he is? Someone that you know?
Oh, PSBs?
Nope. Someone that you know. Do you know
PSBs? Dan Ward Smith?
No, good guess though. Great guess.
Ben Ryan?
No. He inspects things.
Oh, James Hudson.
Correct.
Chemistry. I went to university with him. He was in he was in the Bath Uni team, and chemistry expert, nutrition guru.
On the salary cap point.
Yeah.
The example, because this links into what we're saying about back rows. The example that they gave was wings at Harlequins, and Charlie Morgan spoke to Charlie Walker, who was obviously released by Harlequins,
along with Tim Visser
and Marlon Yard.
Yard,
they jettisoned. So it also referenced that Charlie Walker was on good money, apparently, because he had to take a significant pay cut to go to Zebre. But they've brought in two academy players. So they're starting wings at the moment, Ibatoya, plus they've got Ishmael, who's a South African who will have come cheap.
Yeah. Gonova.
Gonova, who is...
Not that cheap.
Not that cheap, but he's 35.
Yeah.
So And then Nathan Earle is the other one who's
not that cheap.
Not that cheap, but he's injured at the moment.
Like wings grown trees. Any player, right, which is basically normal body shape and 6 foot-ish grows on trees.
That's loads of them.
Yeah, there's loads of them. So if you need roughly that profile, you're fine. I think second rows are actually going to get more valuable because there's not many. It's like the Venn diagram. Massive skills, massive fitness,
I know what you're saying, but actually the main function of a second row, the main function, obviously this would be to do down the top elite second row's job, but the main function of a second row is to hit things,
yeah.
Beat people and rucks.
You've just got to be 6'5".
Yeah.
So it's the same profile as a flanker as long as you are 6'5" or taller.
So So maybe a line out second row, a sort of line out expert second row, the number five, I get what you're saying. The number four, I think they're the same. My brother was an example of that. A guy that was just had a big engine, will hit things all day, do a load of the work that the people in the stands don't see, but the teammates really value. Your beloved Sale Sharks got James Phillips, and they had Jonathan Mills who do that exact job.
Too good.
Jonathan Mills. No. He had wonderful hands.
Anyone who plays in the Premiership is an outstanding elite athlete.
Yeah, absolutely right. Two good tight head locks there.
And Exeter have got guys like Dave Dennis who just hit things all day.
That's exactly. Yeah. So yeah, you're right. Actually,
and you can pick up one of them from a Pacific Island or New Zealand or Australia or South Africa have got
all the
South Africa have got them everywhere.
Yeah, or the Championship.
Or the Championship.
Why
are
these right? Serious point, right? Why are Premiership clubs not over in Holland scouting right now?
Handball players or ice hockey players.
Can you run a lot and hit things low to the ground? Well, not yet, but I could in 3 months. Brilliant. Get in Sale FC right now. That's what I'd be doing.
You're 6'6".
Yeah.
You're 120 kg.
Perfect.
You'll do a job.
It's like, in fact, that's what they need to do. Premiership clubs, because it'll be outside the salary cap, need to hire a scout. We'll do this. Mm. You go and hang out in Tbilisi. Go and check out Dorman in Tbilisi. Handball players in Holland.
Yeah.
You say that so flippantly, Tim. I can't imagine how bloody miserable it is to watch amateur rugby in Utrecht and like just waiting for the 6'6" person to run out, and they never do, and they don't run out for about 100 odd games. Or then we'd have to all go to watch handball for an afternoon. No, thank you.
Or a sort of cat burgling petty criminal that could be transformed into a winger, like a young kid on a rough estate somewhere who's good at running away from the police.
Yeah,
got a job for you, sunshine. Wing. There's a movie in this, assembling a team of waifs and strays from various places.
I tell you what you'd do is you go to Barcelona and you'd get your wallet, right? And you'd have your wallet on like a bit of a string attached to an alarm and just have it poking out of your jeans. Walk around Los Ramblas, and as soon as it goes, it sets off the alarm. Die pack. We've already got the suspect. We can see if he can pass and catch and that kind of thing. We could assemble a whole academy within a day,
or just actually have wallets with no cash in them.
Perfect.
Just a card in them saying "Call us." We want you.
Yeah, then with your skill, wanted. Excellent. I think we've solved a few salary cap issues there.
Yeah.
Well done.
No other news knocking around, is there? Oh, Rob Howley.
Rob
got his 18-month ban.
I don't know what to think of.
Suspended, but 9 months suspended. So yeah, 16th of June 2020, he can be involved in rugby again.
So
the bets. It was 363 different bets. A lot of them on the Welsh team.
Well, there's only 24 or 25 on the connected event.
One on a Welsh player.
Two on Welsh players to score tries.
To score tries first.
Named players in named international matches to score tries.
He lost money.
Yeah, so there were over 1,000 games he bet on. Normally doubles, trebles, and accumulators. Normally only small amounts, and it was described as his recreational gambling. He did it all through his Wales Online email address. Wales Rugby, email address and phone number.
Oh, Rob!
But it was only small amounts, and it just comes across as it comes across as total stupidity, combined with, if you read the judgment, and this was mentioned in the press as well, combined with some personal issues, because the trigger appears to be his sister's death.
When you say small amounts, what are you talking about?
Well,
60 quid?
No,
£10,
way. So it's not specific about it, but The first one where there is a named Wales international player to score a try in a named international match, which was Wales versus Ireland this year in the Six Nations, it says in the judgment, no more than a few pounds. So wow. You're talking £3 or £4.
And overall, over the number of the bets that they investigated, he lost £4,000.
£4,000, yeah.
Okay, so that's it. I mean, is that okay? I mean,
over that is over a 5-year period. Yeah, £4,000 loss. You
know, divide that into how many hundreds of bets?
£800 a year.
So
a few pounds on the average
on that. I mean, it's embarrassing. So, is it more embarrassing that he didn't win? I mean, like, if you're looking to employ him next time, does he really know what he's talking about? At least get one of the fucking... Oh, sorry. Just get one of the try scorers, surely. It's just so sad, isn't it? That's what I can't really... you want to criticise it, but you can't really, because it's just so stupid and so pathetic.
Stupidity.
In a literal sense, by the way.
Yeah, the two things. Yeah, but the stupidity from both sides. Yeah. To be doing it on a linked WRU and... email address and phone number.
See, that's just to me. Did he know that he wasn't allowed and supposed to be doing it?
I wonder, I'm sure he did. I know people in rugby, right, who are not even involved with coaching, okay? Who are involved maybe, you know, in some other ancillary part of the club, and they will not touch sports betting for that same reason. And I think that's the attitude you've got to have. I would be amazed. In fact, there's a guy who you can follow on Twitter, who I'll mention later, who does a load of this safeguarding stuff and training for players. And I don't believe there's any way you could operate, particularly in the Welsh national team, and not know this.
They have Ken Owens was asked, and he said everyone involved in it every year has training, specific training that you have to complete.
It's things like...
mandatory.
Yeah, so it's honestly things like people approaching you in hotel lobbies and asking, you know, what the team is. You're not allowed to... I mean, you're not allowed to say anything. Including Premiership teams, actually, because if you know the team for the following week, then you've got an advantage over the markets. So you're not allowed to say or do anything.
Well, as Tom Ascott found out.
Yes, yeah. Exactly right.
Yeah, there's no way he didn't know. He knew for a combination of stupidity and grief, he did it, knowing the potential consequences.
Why from his Wales account?
He's been caught out... So the judgment does say that they've done a sweep of his computers as well to find out if there's any other activity other than this.
My computer in bleach.
This stuff. but they've said nothing.
You don't need to go in the incognito mode. Do they keep history in incognito mode?
I knew I was going to be banned for 2 years anyway. No, you're not having it.
Yeah, it sounds like he's genuinely significantly remorseful because he's owned up to everything. Yeah. They didn't find anything that he hadn't already admitted once he got caught.
It sends a pretty clear message that it's not acceptable. And if anyone was in any doubt, if there was anyone involved in a rugby club or rugby in general, like I'm sure, I'm sure probably even in my role, I'm probably...
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't, if in your role, I wouldn't touch it, just in case.
Not worth it because you could be...
I certainly wouldn't use it
party
for your
to. I certainly
wouldn't use it for your advantage in fantasy rugby, Tim, because that would be disgraceful.
I'd never do that.
You too.
It's one thing stealing off a bookie, but stealing off your mates. You have to be pretty low to be doing that, Tim Cocker.
All I did was saw that Steve Maffey was fit at the London Irish training ground, fitting out and running out with the team, and I thought, oh, he's available. I might sign him.
Oh, is he packing down at six? Second row packing down at six.
When you say fit, I mean, what's your definition and parameters?
Well,
of
having watched the game, there's some questions there.
Yeah, not injured is what he means.
Just the last thing on Howley. So his ban is a 9-month ban, of which he's already served 3 months. It finishes on the 16th of June, 2020, which means he could actually coach in the Premiership or Pro 14 final, which is 4 days after his ban finishes. Which is very, very, very unlikely. I mean, but I just thought it's an interesting timing to be fair.
If you were a boss, where would be a good fit, or would anywhere be a good fit after this?
Well, the answer is for Rob Howley. It sounds harsh. I just simply wouldn't employ him. I'm not that impressed with his body of work. Truth be told,
CV's pretty impressive.
It does. It reads great when you don't know that it's Rob Howley coaching those teams.
Yeah, I don't know.
If you did a slightly sort of more investigative job in on that. So let's look at the Wales' performance. He's involved in a brilliant
let's
Wales
just
team.
Say.
Was Gatland was there then, okay, and Gatland wasn't there yeah. then, okay. Gatland was there again then.
But Gatland wasn't there, and then he wins the Six Nations.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, there is some...
Yeah, it's a fair point.
Flip it this way. What if it was Rob Baxter that got caught? Would I employ Rob Baxter? I just want to think about the thing about the gambling, okay? The answer is yes, I would. It doesn't take my image of the guy. I think rather than anything else, it's unfortunate.
Well,
would I employ Newcastle without the gambling? I'm on the fence on it.
Right, okay.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
I don't think one thing affects the other.
I'm of that opinion.
He was being lined up for Italy by all accounts, so he's clearly highly rated within the game.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, again, his CV reads brilliantly.
I mean, Italy would be a great gig because all he needs to do is win one game.
One game,
Six Nations, and you're the best coach they've had in years. So, maybe.
I guess the other precedent for this would be Dean Richards.
Yes.
After Bloodgate.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a couple of years of suspension and then...
Which is weird, isn't it? Because
Newcastle
that is by far the worst cheating scandal.
Yeah, because...
By far.
In this was not trying to affect any result of any match.
Yes.
And... They do talk about there's no evidence that he's passed on information. There's certainly no evidence that he profited from it because he lost £4,000.
And no evidence that he, in a meeting, pushed for the selection of a particular player.
Yeah. I mean, for £2, would you do it?
No.
Yeah.
No, you wouldn't.
Stupidity and grief is the explanation for this. That's all it is.
He's paid a high price.
He's paid the right price, in my opinion. Yeah. And they do go through in the judgment whether they could have. There is potential for significantly longer ban, and they decided this is right. And
is it suspended? Is it?
It's 18 months.
So if he goes and does any more betting, then the rest will be enforced.
Yeah,
18 months. He serves 9 now, and the other 9 is suspended for 2 years, and he does, if there's any other disciplinary issue that kicks in on top of what issue is.
I hate to probe and ask more questions here. Is that banned from all rugby?
Yes.
Yes.
That's a shame.
Not even allowed to go to a local club.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's a shame, really. I mean, I would...
Some communities...
Yeah, I would say, like, okay, sure, ban him from the paid game, the professional game, but let's not deprive the rest of rugby from him. You know, maybe there's some small club in his town that could benefit from him doing something. And that seems to be a shame.
Pretty
decent penance, actually.
Yeah, that would have been quite nice. Almost like a community service.
Yeah, if it was 9 months suspended on the basis that you commit to X number of hours of community coaching.
Who is betting on Bonner Mine?
I've played at that club. It's an interesting club, that, up on the top of the hill. Outside Swansea. Yeah. Hard men.
Very hard.
Yeah. Very hard, yes. Men.
Very hard. Very, yeah.
So back
to the rugby.
Yes.
Just one more thing on Leicester Tigers.
Yes,
the guy,
please.
Is a guy I would like to see who I think would fit in very well in that back row, who was injured for yesterday, and that's Guy Thompson.
Yes, agreed.
I think Guy Thompson and Taufua, those two are dynamite.
You mean Guy Thompson to 7? Taufua to 6?
Taufua played 7. To be honest, I'd have either one of those two ahead of Callum Afoni at 8, because Callum Afoni is massive, but he just lacks the explosivity.
Yeah. No. Yeah.
So one of those two at 8, one of them at 7, whoever at 6.
Of course, you've got Callum Green at 6.
Yeah, Green at 6, fine.
The table reads, we'll get on to Saracens, but Leicester now on 4 points out of the first 6 games.
Ooh. And that is actually the biggest thing from that game, is that Leicester got nothing out of it. They should have... After 30 minutes, they had 3 tries. They have to get at least one losing bonus point or the 4-try bonus point. Or when you're at that point at half-time, you should be winning the game at home.
There was a lot of criticism of George Ford, and I've sort of on this bandwagon in terms of I think Leicester Tigers are a worse team with him than when they had Burns and vice versa. So, you know, I'll explain that another time. But one of the criticisms of Ford this game was he couldn't close out the match, which I can kind of see, but I also think it's unfair because it's not just about Ford closing out the match, it's about Exeter wanting to open the match back up again. It's not simply Ford decides to close it down and that's all she wrote.
Yeah.
It's more a case you've got to stop this awesome machine.
I mean, partly it's Leicester's pressure they put on Exeter, but Exeter gave away a lot of penalties in that first half.
It
was almost like they, in a very Saracens-esque way in the past, went in at half time. Factory reset and came back out.
Yeah, they're good.
Oh, look, it's Exeter again.
Yeah,
here they are.
And they did very Exeter things in that second half.
Yeah.
One of the things which made me a bit wary about Leicester's situation. How Jordan Murphy found himself in an altercation. Well, no, not at all. Yeah. Do you know the story behind the altercation?
I don't know the story, but I just saw the...
Yeah. Well, it was in the stand chatting to fans.
Yeah, so what happened?
I thought that was a jovial thing.
No, I quite admire him for doing this, actually. So, as he said to the BT reporter afterwards, what happened is he was walking up through the tunnel. He used some very, very bad language. In front of a kid, someone called him out for it. They had an argument. He then came out and then said sorry. And then owned up to it. I really like that.
Yeah.
I really like the fact that, I was a bit of an idiot going up. I shouldn't have, Leicester is probably the quintessential family club. Mm-hmm. Just owned up to it on TV. And so I'll just take his word for it. If that's all that happened, fair play for him to just dealing with it. Mm-hmm. Owning it and dealing with it.
Fair play.
But his teams are lost.
Other games.
Well, yeah, Exeter find themselves, conversely, at the top of the table, 20 points, overtaking Northampton, who suffered their second defeat of the season.
Yes, he did.
Against Sale, who now move into the top four.
By the way, let's just, like you said at the start of the show, Tim, temper that top four talk, because have you seen how many teams are on the same amount of wins and losses?
London Irish in ninth, above them Worcester, all the way up to Bristol in third. Eighth to third all have three wins and are separated by 4 points.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I was at this game. A few things to report. Number one, Akka van der Merwe is a hell of a player. Two,
when he hits his arrows.
Yeah, I was going to say, how are his arrows?
Let's talk about that another time. For now. there is more to Sale's lineup woes than just Akka, but we'll talk about that later. The other thing I'd like to mention is Janzi van Rensburg is now starting to look like the guy who played at the Lions. He is superb.
Well, I mean, in both senses of the word, and I think the two are directly related.
Yes,
he
absolutely.
He now looks like an elite, muscle-bound
Would you like to know
athlete.
Why?
James Hudson? No. No, why? Yeah. Mark Wilson's said, here, do this.
No. I asked him about it after. I said...
How did you ask him? How did you frame that particular question?
I said, you looked awesome today. And actually, you look like you've got in some pretty good shape or some such thing.
Looking lean, bro.
And he said, the reason is my wife, and she is controlling his diet.
Oh, wow.
So there is a little snippet of information for
you. Wow.
So as a neutral who spoke to Sale fans yesterday, I guess the message would be, thank you, Mrs. van Rensburg.
He's not done a...
Is it Mrs. Hansi van Rensburg?
Mrs. Hansi...
Rohan Jansi von...
Yeah, what exactly is the surname?
JVR, Jansi von Rensburg.
Yeah, but it's Johan's his first name, but it's not Rohan Jansi.
Rohan Jansi von Rensburg. He's got a brother, hasn't he?
Yes, he has.
Let me look up the name of his brother, and then...
And he is...
Good point, Phil. Excellent. Well done. Oh, he is Jansi van Rensburg. So, yeah. Thank you, Mrs. Jansi van Rensburg.
Yeah. I hope she's not double-barreled the double-barreledness. Janzi von Rensburg.
Van der Merwe.
he is genuinely one of the nicest guys at Sharks. Really, really nice guy. And what a hell of a player now.
Yeah.
Yeah. The family name is Janzi van Rensburg.
And he's a focal point. He gives the team an identity.
Do you know who he reminds me of? Obviously. Tuolangi. Because everyone assumes Tuolangi is just a big bosher. Actually, Tuolangi's got a lot more to his game than that. His pace, his feet. And now he's looking in better shape. That's it. That's exactly what Roan brings. He's looking absolutely brilliant. I think the problem Sale have with that combination of Sam James and Roan is you can't replace them. There's nobody like Sam James. There's no one like van Rensburg.
Yeah.
It's not like you just plug in the next...
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at UH1.com.
Van Rensburg.
But with players with that unique skill set, you can say the same. Saracens can't really replace Billy Vunipola.
No, they can't.
Leicester can't replace Manu Tuilagi.
Or George Ford.
Nope.
And...
But Exeter seems to replace everyone.
Or Tolisso Vianu.
Yeah, Bristol can't replace Nathan Hughes or Charles Pietro.
Yeah, but...
Exeter
literally replace everyone all the time, continually.
Yeah, because a lot of their players, with the exception of a few, like Henry Slade is difficult to replace because he's silky running.
Ollie Devoto came on and did well, though.
Devoto played very well at 12.
But yeah, but Exeter are quite a system team, aren't they?
They are, same as Saracens. Yeah.
Yeah, the problem with the disappointing part about this game wasn't Sale. Sale, I thought, were quite good, although I don't think Diamond was particularly happy with the game. I think the problem with it was Northampton, who looked absolutely toothless. And I can't work out why, because we've seen them play for the first part of the season, and they looked absolutely dynamite. They looked dynamite for about 20 minutes against Leinster. And the only real thing I can put this down to is the fact that I wonder if those Leinster defeats have really damaged their confidence. I mean, they were really flying high before this game.
I draw back on the World Cup final as well. I mean, we saw England get pumped in the scrum and it had a psychological effect on the whole performance. And now the grounds are getting a bit stodgier, raining relentlessly. I think the importance of that gets dialed up a bit. And with other teams having all their frontline players back integrated and comfortable in systems again, there's no hiding place. If you have a bit of a week or off day, you'll get shown up for it. And Northampton have got a scrum issue. They've got a scrum problem.
Do you know what?
Yeah,
they actually do. I mean, there are a few technical issues which won't bore the listeners with. But yeah, that is exactly the reports coming out after the game. They didn't feel solid in the scrummage. To cut it short, you're exactly right, Tim. They've got a big scrum issue.
Yeah, we have been saying it for a little while. Their pack does look a little bit lightweight.
Sale, on the other hand, I'm pleased to report, I think they've finally got that balance. So the problem with Sale was, I don't think they worked out who's good off the bench and who's a good starter. And I've ended up with this boy, Curtis Langdon, who London Irish fans might know because Webber's out. He makes a very good foil for a replacement hooker because, of course, we all want to know what Sale Shark's replacement hooker situation is. but also having Harrison off the bench, who is a good impact guy, and Cooper Woolley. I mean, it just makes a lot more sense now. So I think they've got their front row issues sorted out. They've always had a good front row, but who are the starters? Who are the backups? That's been nailed.
Do you think Dimes will get top four this year?
I think so.
I don't think Dimes thinks he'll get top four this year, reading between the lines on the press conference after the game. Because there's no choice about it. He was not happy that there was no bonus point. He said he was happy, but when you actually listen to what he said, he wasn't happy about the fact that they spent so much time in the Northampton 5 metre looking for that bonus point. He specifically said, if we do that week after week, we're not going to be top four. So they can do it, but those things which Dimes identified have to be implemented.
I called an arrow sale win, and I think they will. I think they will. And looking around, it's really interesting that the sort of narratives change based on results. Because Harlequins went to Wasps and got a win, which leaves you putting a big question mark over Wasps' head. Does it mean that we're sort of going, okay, maybe Harlequins are back on the way up, or we're going to have to wait? That's why having a block of three games now is going to be great.
They beat Wasps, and I just don't believe in Wasps.
Yeah, I'm... I think Wasps are really going to struggle this year.
They're stingless.
they are struggling.
What do Wasps do well?
This Wasps team?
Yeah.
Good question.
And are they caught in the backwash of sort of like Danny Cipriani style flair type game, and they still want to play that style, but they don't really have the players for it?
Yeah, I mean, so Sapuanga, who wasn't playing in this game, he can play that way, but he's just not clicked at all. He's such a good player when he's at Highlanders and playing for the All Blacks.
Do you think it matters that he was coached by Tony Brown, who is a genius?
Might help, but no, he's a supremely talented individual who can do pretty much everything. His passing game is brilliant, his kicking game is brilliant, he can run from anywhere, but I was expecting him to click with Wasps this year. For whatever reason, it's just still not.
And also, some games he's been held on the bench. So you have to start asking, like, why would Wasps do this? There must be an underlying reason that they think Billy Searle is. I assume Billy Searle started, or was it Gopeth?
No, Gopeth was on the bench.
But yeah, Billy Searle.
But, you know, I mean, if Billy Searle's starting, in my mind, they need to ditch.
Oh, no, it wasn't. It was Umaga.
Umaga. Oh, it was, yeah.
Yeah, Jacob Umaga started. Sorry, not Billy Searle.
So I'm sure Searle started ahead of him as well.
Yeah, and a little bit last season.
That's really worrying, because you're paying him a lot of money. And Wasps don't have a lot of money, from what I understand. So I think I would, I don't know.
Well, they find themselves on one win and on 6 points, looking over their shoulder at Saracens, who absolutely ripped Bristol to bits.
Aren't they good?
Yeah.
Aren't they good?
And they changed up a few positions, not too many, but they changed up enough to still get a massive 5-point win, and have all their guys fit and firing for next week.
Who's next on the kill list?
Do you know what I like about Saracens, as Phil just works that out? What I really like about Saracens is, and Mark McCall has been at pains to say this relentlessly, and it's something that, you know, you said this could be the consequence of this issue that they find themselves in. Actually, their younger guys that they've brought through themselves awesome. Are the ones that are showing up. Nick Tompkins has been awesome this season.
Yeah.
Max Mallins came in and looked really good.
Matt Gallagher, who's played 15 as well.
He didn't play this week, but
in Europe, looked great.
Don't forget, fantasy rugby draft legend Ben Earl.
And Ben Earl.
5 tries in 6 games?
Doesn't stop scoring that
much. Or is it 6 in 6?
The 7 that plays like an 8. No, scavenges like a 7, carries like an 8. What a dream.
The season he's having is ridiculous.
I mean, he will be pushing. Him and Simmons of Exeter will be pushing Underhill and Curry very, and very hard. Yeah. And Wilson and Ludlam.
It's almost like...
And Ezekwe's been playing great as well.
It's almost like 6-foot-something guys are easy to find, isn't it?
Those...
In 6-foot-something flankers, easy to find.
Well, those five are... I bet there's an inch or two and 5 kg between the two Currys, Underhill, Ludlam and Ben Earl. They're all about the same size and shape. And Sam Simmons, throw him in as well. Willis, I think, is a little bit bigger.
Is he?
Yeah.
I think Willis might be the best out of a lot of them.
God, there's some talent there.
Yeah.
There's some serious, serious talent.
The other guy, as we're talking about England, who I really think should be considered, is Will Stewart. Will Stewart? Yeah.
Bath prop.
I mean, I know it's early days. Every time I've seen him, he's been absolutely dominant.
Their tight five, their front row in particular, have looked good.
In fact, actually, all three of them. I mean, I know there's a lot of competition at loose head.
Yeah, Tom Dunn's looked great. Benno Urbano was in the England setup
before they broke him.
Before his knee injury, so massive knee injury.
With Saracens in mind, just looking at JB, well, I'm looking at the whiteboard where it says Saracens top four. They are currently 29 points off Sale.
Can they get up 29 points in 16 games left?
But the fact we're having this conversation, let's take 6th and Harlequins 15 points. They're 28 points.
15
off
points. They will hunt down Harlequins mercilessly.
Yeah.
They're getting past Harlequins. I think
you're probably right. I'd be confident that they're going to get top 6. Because Saracens will beat everyone apart from Exeter.
Who have got in next week or the week after?
Next week.
Boom.
Saracens will beat everyone apart from Exeter at Sandy Park.
That game, I can't wait for that match.
Everyone else is going to beat everyone else.
I rarely root against Exeter, but I'll be rooting against Exeter.
I'll be rooting for Exeter, definitely.
I'm talking about young players that are making a name for themselves. Louis Rees-Zammit at Gloucester. He cost me a fantasy rugby draft match alone.
Yeah.
With his 40-odd points, absolutely dominating. But
he's dynamite.
And, you know, dovetailing with another conversation about that we had a few weeks ago about Johnny McNichol, Willis Halaholo, lovely blokes. I don't like the residency laws, whatever.
Or them personally.
Do Wales need to start signing 29, 30-year-old New Zealanders?
No, but
when they've got a 19-year-old Welshman at Gloucester?
If I was England, I'd be playing all sorts of dirty tricks now.
$25,000 a week, $26,000 a week.
Oh my word! I would be signing up. That
Eddie Jones just to troll him. We'll throw the carrot out there, won't he? Like he did with Vellacott and Gary Graham.
Gary Graham.
I don't know. I don't have a training camp with Eddie. Is exactly the carrot everyone expects. You know, it's not a nice place to be. So maybe don't do that. Maybe make him play for the Saxons.
He did. Andy Goode asked him the question on Twitter, and he just replied with the Welsh flag.
Yeah, he's young, isn't he? Wait until
he's got a mortgage.
Yeah, wait until he looks at the cash flow plans and goes, what's the difference here? Hang on a minute, I've got to play the Ospreys, the Dragons, market rates. Forget it.
Hey, if his market rate's 400k.
Well, actually, what is the market rate for him? If the Dragons come in, 20k? Well,
he'll be on an academy, so he'll be below 30k right now.
Yeah.
Because Louis Rhys Summit and Yohan Lloyd. Two Premiership players playing their trade in the West Country that could be, I mean, talk about Liam Williams. If you had 400k to spend, Yohan Lloyd and Louis Rhys Summit instead of Liam Williams?
If those boys, I'm sure they do, by the way, if they're listening, don't move. Don't do it.
Yeah,
let them
stay with Pat Lam coaching you and Johan Ackerman coaching you.
Exactly. Do not go to Wales, no matter what they do or say. Make them change the laws for you. Don't bend to their will.
Josh Adams, listening to the podcast, nodding along furiously.
Josh Adams crying. Look where I am. Look at this hellhole.
He was brilliant, Louis Rhys Summit.
Yeah, he was.
On the weekend. The way he took those tries was...
A little nudge.
Yeah. I'm sure he knocked that on.
He missed control. How did he catch it? It was off his knee or something?
He kind of caught it and then tapped it forward and grubbered it. It's very...
It
bounced over his head and he kind of
knocked
pushed
down and then...
Or it was either a fumble that he corrected with a kick or he knew he was going to get tackled unless he releases it and kicks it.
Stupid question, right? I always thought that if you sort of slap a ball down and then accidentally kick it, that is still a knock-on.
It is.
So there was at least an element of control in it.
Oh.
He didn't slap it down.
Yeah, it wasn't a slap down.
Because would be a knock-on. It's the same as if you... You know, if you knock it on but then catch it, it's not a knock-on. However, if you knock it, it goes past a player and then you catch it, it is a knock-on. Because you've gained
an advantage.
An advantage by the knock-on.
I need to watch this again. Interesting.
They only showed an unsatisfactory angle in the replays.
Hmm.
Like it was like from the centre, top of the stand. So you're kind of like over his shoulder.
Well, he does
from
cover
a distance.
Very fast.
He's rapid. Yeah. He's absolutely rapid.
What do you do with a player like that? How do you improve him? Because he's already very, very fast. And like, this is a serious point. Like,
him and Ollie Thorley would make a great combo because Ollie Thorley's rapid, got a step, but just strong as an ox. And this guy's sort of more
willowy.
Willowy, yeah.
But
he is right now. I think he'll because he's tall. Recently, 6'3" or 6'4".
That's kind of my point, though. I mean, if you're a strength and conditioner. Do you want the extra bulk on him for whatever reason you might want it? Or do you try and keep him lean like a sprinter? What do you do with him?
Look at Johnny May.
Johnny May's a great example. So Johnny May has stayed relatively lean. You want a bit more muscle on him.
Yeah.
But partly for protection, partly for defence and strength and power. But Johnny May, the way that he was turned from a bit of a space cadet in some scenarios to the defensively solid and phenomenally solid under a high ball player that he is today is
talk about guys in shape, and he's about as in shape as any English player.
Yeah, incredible muscle tone. Not sure how I'd describe it, but
so what's the answer to my question? What do you do with Rhys Summit?
Do you
throw him in the gym?
Put another 5 kg on him, maybe 7 kg. Do it over a 12 to 18 month period.
Keep the 5 meter. Off the mark speed, that's where you focus.
Yeah.
Because he can beat.
He's bloody quick.
Yeah, he's good. Real, real good prospect. And Gloucester have had a few wingers over
there. Do
you
know who else played very, very well when he came on this weekend for Gloucester?
Crisis.
Correct. Crisis with a massive, massive carry.
Jamar Ford.
A massive K. Yeah. And his carry with a K.
Exactly. Yeah. Nailed it. Again. I tell you what, they are getting some great value there. Great value.
I know that there'll be a lot of rugby clubs around the UK doing a Boxing Day match. Is that one something you've ever got involved in?
Yeah, Sedgley Park always do a Boxing Day match.
Is it just a bit of a social?
Yeah, it's normally
whiskeys at half time kind of
players.
Thing.
Yeah.
Or does it get a bit spicy?
It's occasionally got a bit spicy. It's normally kind of ex first team players ranging from recently retired up to 60 against the kind of second/third/fourth team.
One of the saddest years was last year when my club, Colwyn Bay, my original club, Colwyn Bay, back in Wales, basically did not open over Christmas. And I think it's an absolute travesty.
Disgrace.
It is an absolute disgrace. So I'm hoping Colwyn Bay does open up this year because I will go and play like I play for them every year. So, yeah, last
Why
year
did they not do it last year? Just
let's best if we don't get into that.
Yeah, okay, but, that's fine.
But they didn't, and I was absolutely furious.
Yeah.
So hopefully this year something will happen.
People see sense.
The first year I've not played there over the new year for about a decade.
In fact, you just reminded me, I want to check in and see if one tradition, one of the spiciest, it was always a pre-Christmas game, but one of the spiciest games of the whole year, that I, probably for health and safety type reasons, I bet it doesn't happen anymore, but my old school, the school I went to in Newbury, St. Bart's, it had a sick form attached, so you go through the whole school in the sick form. Mm. But the Saturday, so the it would have been the Saturday just gone, the Saturday after you break up for Christmas, there's the ONA game, the Old Newburyans Association match, and it was the people that had been out of school the year before, or they might have allowed 2 years out, play against the first team. So you come back from your university and you play against the first team.
So yeah, we had the same thing at St. David's.
It was absolutely awesome. You'd have a massive piss up together afterwards, but I bet it's the sort of thing that doesn't happen anymore.
To my knowledge, the Old Davidians do play St. David's College first team. Or has that been cancelled? I'm pretty sure, because the rugby master there is a great lad and still makes sure that these things happen. I'd be amazed if it doesn't happen.
Oh, there you go.
Is it on?
Yes. Oh, brilliant. It still goes. St. Bart's v. the ONA. St. Bart's.
Oh, no, you can't play because you're too old.
I can't play now, no. But the game happened last weekend, and it was St. Bart's 12, the ONA 5. So St. Bart's 1.
Yeah. No, I think high scoring game. St. David's College one is open age. I'm sure it is.
I'm going to give a shout out for Ben McCarthy, who scored the winning try for St. Bart's.
Good lad. Nailing it.
There you go.
I remember playing a Boxing Day game. God, it's at least 10 years ago, 2008 or 2009, at Obi Wiggs Rugby Club. I was down in Leicester over Christmas and played that, which is where Tigers train.
Oh,
so
cool.
Really nice setup, really nice pitch.
Is that the one with the steps down?
No, I remember it. It's quite a modern clubhouse, all Tigers branding on everything. Nice big first team pitch right in front of the clubhouse.
Is this one? Has it got like Welcome to Work?
I can't remember. It 10 years ago. It was about 2008 or 2009.
So Tigers have all these signs around, and when Matt O'Connor took over, you started defacing the signs, but they made no sense. Like, so instead of Welcome to Work, it was Welcome to Your Potential or something.
Welcome to the potential of your potential.
Another great Matt O'Connor success story.
But there'll be a lot of clubs doing that. So
28th of December, there is a derby. It is Rhythin versus Denby. So I might go and watch that.
There's some great games. So I went to uni with a couple of guys that played at Rhythin. Rob Higgett, one of them. So he was a real famous lad back in Rhythin because he went on and played for Wales A and Bristol.
At a time,
and
the most famous person that I'd ever met. I met him in London Welsh Rugby Club way before I started doing the podcast. And for me, he was literally, because he played at Bristol, the most famous person, certainly most famous rugby player that I'd ever met, ever, ever, as gobsmacked.
And from Rhythin, from your part. But he always talked about, if he did an interview like for BT, if he was still playing for Bristol, let's say, and he was doing an interview for BT Sport, and you went, what's the greatest game, you know, what's your greatest rugby memory? He'd go, beating Lanethley for Rhythin.
Yeah.
for the Colts.
Well, was Avion Lewis Roberts playing then?
Don't think
slightly
so,
before
but it could have been. The team, the Lanethley team, had Dwayne Peel in it, just so you know.
It was a serious Lanethley team.
Yeah, Rhythin have always been
This is kind of exactly my point. The Christmas is a time when old rivalries get stoked up, and there are loads of clubhouses which will be open and having either quite spicy games or social games where everyone's, you know, half cut. But rugby clubs, if you go down to your local rugby club over Christmas, if you we've had listeners get in touch and say they started playing again or they've reconnected with rugby after listening, just. Look up your local rugby club, see what's going on, because it's a great place. Over Christmas, it's a great place.
Should we do next week's?
Yeah, there's loads. And speaking of that, there's some pretty spicy games going on this weekend. Well, we'll save the biggest till last.
Yes. I will just mention the Leinster-Ulster game.
Yeah.
Which was 54-42.
Did you watch it?
I've seen the highlights.
Good.
Some incredible tries scored. I mean, Leinster were 47-14 or 47-12 up after 50 minutes. It was two pretty much total second teams, which is slightly disappointing. But in that way, you do get to see some pretty good young talent on show.
Yeah, watch Premiership Cup for that.
And Leinster do have
an A-League for that.
Leinster do have some pretty good. Well, Leinster's young talent would probably be mid-table in the Premiership. They're fairly handy.
Can I just highlight that also? Another at the moment as we record this, Toulon are absolutely smashing Clermont, and I looked at the team and Clermont
full team out.
Abendanon, Beetham, Penault, Moala, Raka, Lopez.
Ooh.
Are they home or away?
It's in Toulon.
It's in Toulon. But Toulon, so watch Toulon. There might be something going on there.
I mean, they've spent enough money.
Yeah, Etzebeth scored the first try, so yeah.
And Bryce Heame tearing it up.
Bryce Heame as well, he's tearing it up.
Hmm. Right, so
fixtures next week.
Yeah, we've completed the Pro 14.
Pro 14 wrap. Oh no, Dragons beat Scarlets. Last minute, Sam Davis, drop goal.
Good.
That's what Liam Williams has got to suffer through next year.
Oh, God. Graveyard of dreams.
Right, Friday night. The Friday night lights. Friday night games just feel like they're often bad. Much worse than they should be.
Yeah, they promise so much.
This one could buck that trend. I hope so.
This could be a good game. Bristol hosting Wasps.
I'm working at this one. I'm looking forward
to
it.
Are you?
Yeah. It'll be a sellout crowd, I imagine, or close to.
So there are some clubs where Friday nights work well. Bristol is one because it will be packed.
Yeah.
They'll be ready to go.
I've never actually been to Ashton Gate.
I have been to the Memorial Ground several times.
How close is it to town? Because I've been out in Bristol a few times.
I think it's quite far away.
Is it?
I think it's a bad part of Bristol. I can't be sure.
It's not a bad part of Bristol.
Are you sure
it's
about that?
No, far from it. It's
there again, I played in the worst part of Bristol and they refer to it as the dark side.
No, it's far from it. Far from it. It's along the so the Memorial Ground was up, I don't know if it's the north, but it was up the hill.
Yeah, it's Filton.
It was up the hill towards that way. But this is along south. The river, just like below, like Clifton's up the hill, up on the hill, and it's down on the bottom in the river valley.
So yeah, it's southwest of the city centre.
It's on the main road into the city centre.
I just remember the boys in Dings Crusader saying it was the bad part of town.
Well, that's because it's the opposite side of town to Dings.
But actually, thinking about it, we played along among burnt out cars, so you know maybe
it's near. It's near quite a funky part of town actually.
Okay.
What's that place? Bedminster, and it's near.
Yeah,
Bedminster.
Not far from Bedminster,
which is like
South
it's quite a decent part
I love
of town.
Bristol. We should really go there.
I do like Bristol. So it's a mile or so walk into the centre.
15 minutes walk to Temple
Meads. Which is not bad.
So anyway, they're playing Wasps and they'll get back onto winning ways.
Definitely.
At home.
I think a big win for Bristol. Saturday.
Big test of Wasps, that one.
Yeah. Saturday, this will be a good game. Northampton hosting Gloucester.
That's a real tasty
2 o'clock.
This is where my prediction is going to be horribly wrong. I'm going to say there's lots of tries in this. It'll probably be 3-0 Gloucester.
Well, coverage on BT Sport, that one starts at 1:30. There's a double. There's four games over the weekend on BT Sport.
Nice.
Two on the Saturday.
Yes. Oh, so there's the early game and the 4:30 kickoff. Yes. So the Northampton game, this feels like another game that Northampton could get bullied up front, because that Gloucester pack is powerful. It's seriously powerful.
Oh, they're not. I don't know. Sorry, are you talking about Gloucester Northampton here?
This is a barometer. We talk about the three games. This is a barometer. Gloucester came through against Worcester. Can they take it on the road? And Northampton just got a... Well, it wasn't a beatdown, but they got bullied a bit by Sale.
Yeah, they did. And Gloucester looked fairly handy to me when they played Sale. I know what you're saying, but actually, thinking about the game this week, I don't think the Northampton back row got in the game at all.
Laws got shifted to back row, didn't he?
Yeah.
Just before kickoff.
I think that Gloucester have... I mean, it depends on what team they put out, but they can put out some seriously big carriers.
Yeah.
Seriously big.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm saying.
Yeah. Sorry, are you talking about the Northampton pack getting bullied?
Yeah.
I thought you had the other...
I am not saying that Northampton are going to bully Gloucester.
Why on earth are you saying this?
No.
Yeah.
This is a big test. If I did say that,
that's not what I intended to say.
So Gloucester are really good at home, not so good on the road. Northampton... Yeah. I think I would edge towards a home victory. But it's going to be tight.
Yeah, I would probably also edge.
You think Northampton are going to win it?
Yeah.
But
a big test for Gloucester.
So, two things I think. Number one, Gloucester are very, very good at what they do, but sometimes what they do is a bit predictable. So, you know, you watch their forwards carrying, good carriers, but you know it's going to be a little setup of three, and then you know it's going to go to Danny Cipriani, and he's either going to score or he's not.
Well, yeah, it's the bit that's been predictable from Cipriani is the runner out the back.
Yeah.
So the blindside winger or the fullback coming out the back using, or there's a wraparound from Cipriani to Atkinson. Cipriani runs round and then he's got the options out the back.
You feel like you've seen this film a lot, you know, many, many times.
Yeah.
So that is a bit of a problem for me. That said, they are still very good at that, good at it. So I'm going to say an away win.
Okay.
Give me Northampton to right the wrongs.
Or wrong the rights, as I once said.
In fact, these first two games of the weekend are really, really... This is the most interesting weekend of fixtures because Northampton, after Northampton, Gloucester and Bath Sale, we will have a much bigger idea of where all four of those sides could be heading.
Which game's on BT Sport, Tim?
Northampton, Gloucester. And then Quinn's Leicester.
It's outrageous.
So Bath versus Sale
is not on TV.
Is a 3 o'clock kickoff.
You have to travel to the Rec to watch it, JB. You can get on the team bus,
what's
surely.
What's the point in paying for BT Sport?
You got four out of six games.
Sure, great. Yeah.
So, it's just Bath Sale.
Bath are good at home. It'll be a bog at the Rec.
Yeah.
I think Sale win this. I don't know. They match up really nicely.
They
actually
do, yeah.
Jamie Roberts against Johan Jansi von Rensburg. The back rows. Underhill, Curry.
Yeah.
I mean, I actually think that the Sale unit at back row is far more handy than the Bath.
The current
Bath side, yeah. Because if it was Underhill, Low, Falatau.
No, I don't mean.
Or Underhill,
I don't mean
Mercer,
the individuals. Yeah. I don't mean the individuals. I mean
the way they play.
The way they play, as in a cohesive unit. Sale have been forced by injuries to go Curry, Ross, Dupria, rather than two Duprias or two Currys or whatever the combination, or Wilson or whatever. I think they're much more cohesive. Bath should be targeting Sale's line-out. Sale should be targeting Bath's scrum, although I can't wait to see those two scrums collide.
I wouldn't be targeting Bath's scrum. Bath's scrum has been possibly the best thing about them.
You'd target Bath's halfbacks, which again comes back to Curry.
Don't think they get much change out of Wilgriff and Cooney.
It's a good battle, that.
And then
the problem
is Acker's a little bit small, but he's so aggressive.
Yeah. It's an interesting game. I see a tight one, but I just like the Northampton one. I'm just going to say an edged home win.
Yeah, and if I
but
was,
actually, I like that both games. Could
do you know what? If Faf I was, don't have anyone with the X factor of Faf, and therefore I'm going to go with
Jonathan Joseph. Looked good, but again, it's London Irish.
Yeah,
he's got to get the ball. He's got to get the ball. Though.
And if I was Sale, I'd be working on my rush defence and put pressure on him because Bath's backline looked great with loads of time. Will they look as good with Johan Jansi von Rensburg in your face?
And I think the other Dupree is back.
Jean-Luc
might be back. He was banned and he's massive.
So you're going to call a Sale away win?
Yeah, absolutely.
So Gloucester away, Sale away.
Well, not that we can see it.
This game's interesting as well. I mean,
this is very interesting for the league.
For the league. Worcester, London Irish.
Yeah.
Worcester coming off the back of a loss. London Irish coming off the back of a bad loss.
By the way, two disappointing losses for each club respectively.
I'm going to go for another home win.
But it is interesting, right? So what's interesting is at the end of this round of games, either Worcester or London Irish, whichever one you want, who's your favourite to go, not your personal favourite, but one of your favourites to go down, is going to be on, well, it's going to be
three or four,
the top six.
Three or four wins.
So,
potentially.
Well, Worcester could find themselves on four wins if they get a home win against London Irish, which would be one of those looking at the schedule, they'd go, if they were targeting, they'd go, that's a win.
Yeah, we should really look two games ahead so we can sort of predict how the Premiership's going to look after this block of games. Anyway.
And
we saw this weekend, predictions go right out the window.
Yeah, and
Irish can't be that bad again. I actually think there was phases, like the first 15 minutes, where London Irish looked quite nice the way that they were playing. And then the confidence was sapped, and then all the comical errors came in, which we didn't even talk about, like the Phipps pass into touch and whatever.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think that represents what they are.
both as a big player for them, and he's now gone to Japan.
So
for 6 months.
Who do I think? I have no idea. It's a toss.
Home win.
Worcester again.
Now.
Yeah.
Let me see the teams.
I'm being very boring and predictable and then with
big
home
game
wins.
12. Is it? I still miss big game 8.
Yeah.
Big game so 8 good. Was the best.
Big game 8.
I always thought it was the round, but it's not.
Yeah, not the round.
So
the 12th edition of the big
Leicester.
Game.
Because big game 8 came in the 8th round.
Here you are. I'm going to say Leicester win this.
Oh, wow.
Leicester away at Quinns. Yeah. Well, at Twickenham.
At Twickenham. I think Leicester win this. Leicester have had more games than Harlequins at Twickenham, first and foremost. Second of all, they've shown me enough. In fact, both teams have shown me enough that I don't think Quinns are resilient. I think Leicester will look at that win. The question is, do Leicester think that that performance shows what they could be, or has that emotionally drained them?
Well, so, which half do they look at? Do they look at the first half, which was great, or the second half, which was woeful? What will be playing on their minds come 65 minutes?
Do they feel... So I'm worried that they're thinking, we put everything into that and we're still no good.
Yeah, still got nothing. Not a losing bonus point, not a four-try bonus point.
No, I think they look at the first half and go, come on, we can do that for 80 minutes.
Yeah.
They have to. But mentally, they have to, as a coaching staff, focus them on the good things in that first half. But psychologically, it'll be playing on their mind.
But what do they focus on? Because presumably they've got to focus on the errors to fix them. So they're going to be talking about what they've done wrong all week, because that's what you've got to do.
Yeah. Yeah, not good. Give me Quinns.
I'm just going to go home win. It's a clean sweep of home wins.
And with that prediction...
It's not going to be a clean sweep of home wins, though. Is it, Tim?
It never is.
It's not.
No, it will not be.
Do you know why?
Because JB was right on one of them.
Saracens are going to beat Exeter.
Just after the Leicester game. So we're all saying that Wasps and Leicester are both going to lose, both playing away from home. Saracens, it's tough, but Saracens could feasibly get within 12 points of Leicester after this game.
All 14 of Wasps.
They're coming.
Yeah.
They're coming, boys.
They are coming at a rate.
That Sunday game.
At a rate of
live on BT Sport. Exeter Chiefs against Saracens. Tony Rowe having said they should be relegated. All the words after the salary cap thing. I mean, Saracens and Exeter there, but I mean, it's not just. It's
I love Exeter.
The four finals they've had together.
Yeah.
Oh man, there's so much. I love it.
So much spice.
I love Exeter. I now love Saracens. It's hard. I would do anything for a ticket to this game.
This will be dynamite.
This is like the good kid, the sort of good straight A student, and the bad kid sat at the back of class, isn't it?
It's the final of Karate Kid.
Yes, it is.
I'm not even sure which is which now.
Oh, and Saracens, maybe they'll change. In fact, that would be one. They should change to a Cobra Kai kit. Almost in their colour palette.
I'm more thinking that Exeter are... Gerard.
Don't swing on my antique chairs.
Oh, sorry, JB. Exeter are, with their tweed, their brilliant maths professor, Gerard Lambeau, and Saracens are boy from the wrong side of the tracks, who's still absolute genius, Matt Damon, in Good Will Hunting.
Oh, wow. Nice. Wow.
how is
Saracens
it?
Saracens go full bore on this.
They will.
Yeah, fully on it. We've seen what they can do against Leinster. We've seen what they can do against Exeter numerous times. But it's not... They've never done... Okay. The difference is those have all been in neutral venues. This is at Sandy Park. I'm not... They're going to win.
You think Saracens are going to win?
Saracens are going
to
win.
I tend to agree with you.
I think I agree as well.
I would prefer an Exeter win, I must admit. If something feels right and good and proper.
This doesn't even feel like Exeter versus Saracens. This literally feels like the whole of the league.
Versus Saracens. So,
yeah, it feels like they're all pinning their hopes on. If Exeter falls, everyone else is just going to crumble in the path of Saracens.
But yeah, Saracens might not lose another game. If Saracens win this, Saracens will win every remaining game.
Yeah, there's so many. So, I mean, this is like, you know the way... The way Britain held out in World War II.
Exactly.
And that turned the tide.
Yeah.
Those brave
fighter pilots going up. And, you know, this is like, you know, you could go and watch Star Wars, or you could watch this. the empire and the rebellion.
The problem with games like this is, you know, you should really, particularly as you get older, enjoy your life, enjoy every day as it comes. Try and live it to its fullest. I just want all of the days to elapse now. So we can get
yes, started. Yes. Layla, have the kids opened their Christmas presents yet? Yes, yeah, good, fine.
Can I get drunk enough to pass out?
Yeah. Salaryman drunk. Yeah. So
you've got a very different advent calendar going in your house, haven't you? Yeah. Only seven sleeps now, kids.
This game is going to be dynamite.
I can't wait.
Oh. And so I think annoyingly Saracens are going to win. Mm.
That's it. Oh, one last one. Not a prediction, but I think worthy of a mention because it does have a direct impact on the Premiership next year. Newcastle beat Ealing. Do you see that?
I didn't see it. It was on Sky, wasn't it?
It was on Sky. Was it Derry Morris? Stuart Barnes didn't understand that an open hand slap to the face is illegal. It is.
But an open hand slap to the cock is perfectly acceptable back in the day at Exeter Chiefs.
But yeah,
bring that back.
I was kind of hoping Ealing would win this, but they just came up a bit short.
Oh, I did see the Adam Radwan try.
Well, you saw it as in the highlights.
The highlight. I just saw the highlight. That very impressive. He has got wheels.
Yeah,
he's very, very fast.
Yes, difference in experience in those two squads. Ealing are definitely getting there, but it's still a way to go. But it also feels like that might have sealed Newcastle's promotion push, even though it's so early on in the season.
Yeah, I mean, they've retained a lot of players as well, haven't they?
Not retained more Wilson.
And Nicky Gunnover.
Oh, right, so, yeah.
I'm just going to go for a piss.
They used to go...
upstairs. Is anyone in? Are your kids in?
Like, yeah. Okay. Actually, I'm just going to wrap this up, Tim, if that's right.
I've got the back door. Sorry, I can't wait. I've been waiting for ages.
Right, should we just wrap this up? I've got nothing. No, actually, I'll tell you about Mark Wilson.
Okay.
So, I interviewed Mark Wilson on Wednesday.
In the Shark Tank, or...?
No,
Wednesday.
I went down to Carrington, watched a bit of training. Walked Mark Wilson around the pitches for a few laps, did a rugby dungeon, only to find out to my horror, which I've not listened back to it, I ran out of battery.
My
recording device. Oh. So I'm going to listen back to it, and if it's any good, I'm going to play it at the end of this podcast. So, yeah, or I might just put a truncated version on the rugby dungeon. But yeah, Mark Wilson, lovely man, very insightful, but this interview may never see the light of day.
Is that only your second worst technical error with an international back row?
The first one being Khaleesi.
Khaleesi.
Not my error. Someone's error.
An error.
Mistakes were made.
Our collective error.
Yes. And on that bombshell, we shall leave it there. You can find us on Twitter at Rugby Podcast. You can find Tim at Cocker, me at Jay Beardmore, and Phil, presumably you'll be lurking somewhere. On your secret account.
If you're lucky enough.
Oh, no! One last thing.
One more thing.
Thank you very, very much.
Oh, yes.
To Phil from Wheatwood Ales. I was in the rugby dungeon the other day, knock on the door. Phil from Wheatwood Ales dropped us off 12 beers each.
So, beautiful. Perfect timing for Christmas as well.
Exactly. Now, sadly, he didn't.
Do we have any earring makers who listen to the podcast, or just any jewellers of any kind would be handy as well.
Yes, quite. He didn't take up my suggestion, though.
What was the suggestion?
Well, all his beers are actually really, really nice, because I've drank most of mine. But he didn't take up my suggestion, which is one of his beers should be disgusting, purposely disgusting, like Salty Kiss or Negroni disgusting, because people will buy it.
The Negroni
will be part of the disgusting beer club. But no, all of his beers are... sadly, very palatable.
So if someone tells me something is delicious, I want to try it. If someone tells me something is absolutely disgusting,
I have to try it.
Yeah. JB recommended a film to me recently.
Which was it?
Den of Thieves.
Oh, wonderful film.
So a Netflix-only film with Gerard Butler and Fiddy Sen and a few other UFC fighters.
That sounds outstanding.
It is horrendous, but so worth a watch.
Well, I mean, you've seen The Room.
The Room?
Have you never seen The Room?
No.
Oh, hang on. Is this the worst film ever? Yeah. Have you seen the highlights with you? And they're trying to act?
Yeah.
Is that a different one?
I've probably shown you some clips of The Room, but it's the best worst film ever.
Yeah, I'm sure I've seen it.
Go and watch
The Room.
Go and watch
I'll
Room.
Go and watch The Room. And also watch
Tommy Wiseau. It was so bad that one of the actors that was in it wrote a book about how much bad. Of a farce, how bad
was
it was.
Was it meant to be that bad?
No.
It may be a professional.
So I,
no, but it became a massive cult film. I remember watching it for the first time like 10 years ago. And
did you get through the whole thing?
Yeah, it's hilarious. It's absolutely hilarious. But now, but then last year, James Franco, who had bought the... and Seth Rogen had bought the rights to the book to turn it into a film. So there is a film about the making of the worst film ever.
Amazing. Amazing.
Director. I can't remember what it's called now.
But
anyway.
I would recommend Den of Thieves as the worst film. Not the worst film. Just, there's a few holes in it.
Some massive holes.
Yeah, like, basically... there's a sheriff's department which seems to have an unlimited budget. They take on one case at a time, and but allegedly they get results.
There's at least half a dozen of them who
working out all the time on the taxpayer dime,
working out or smoking and drinking and in hotel rooms with prostitutes at all times.
On taxpayer expenses.
There
seems to be there's no office hours.
Yeah,
from what it's a very very shoddy opera, but hey.
Can I play you one tiny little bit of dialogue
from the room? Yes, please.
How's work today? Oh, pretty good. We got a new client at the bank. We make a lot of money.
What client?
I cannot tell you. It's confidential.
Oh, come on. Why not?
No, I can. Anyway, how is your sex life?
Wow. Amazing.
Yeah,
Denethy's. Definitely watch it. Look out for the prom garage scene.
Oh, actually, no. That is a genuinely great...
What's it called? I'm going to put this on my list.
Den
of Thieves.
Den of Thieves on Netflix.
Do not bother watching Den of Thieves. Just look on YouTube, Den of Thieves prom pickup scene. It is comfortably one of the best. I mean, that is genuine. The whole film, there's one great scene, and it's that scene.
Ridiculous.
It's amazing.
Dynamite. The hotel room scene is very good
as well.
So
watch a bit of rugby... but to pass the time between now and next Sunday, watch Den of Thieves and The Room if you've not watched it.
There you go. Movie recommendations from the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast.
Yep. Well, I've already done our outro, so...
right, let the boys play.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Get the Negronis in.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.